In season two of The Sneak, a podcast from For the Win and USA Today, we will tell the story of surfing champion Jack Roland Murphy, who in 1964 pulled a heist that made him the most famous jewel thief in the country. But that was just the beginning of his story, one that quickly spun out of control and then turned deadly. The Sneak, Murders at Whiskey Creek, is available now on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Or experience the entire series right now, ad-free, exclusively on Wondery Plus. Download the Wondery app and hear all of Season 2 today.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. Featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman. The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter. Now, Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
Everybody, welcome to The Counter. We are coming to you recording right after that Sunday night football game. Fantastic football game. The Arizona Cardinals just beat the Seattle Seahawks 37-34 on a last second field goal in overtime. Really, really fun football game, Steve. What'd you think? It's a little late, but fun.
Yeah, it was worth staying up for. Especially seeing like the Cardinals offense kind of start to take off. That's always enjoyable. It hasn't looked so great earlier in the year, so it's a very good sign for a team that everyone was excited for before the season. Now they're starting to live up to the hype. Like, I think we canceled the Cardinals like 3 weeks ago. or I did. You didn't actually do it, so I'm going to take that L on my own. But yeah, they're looking good. I'm not surprised they were in the game, because the Seahawks like never play a normal game where they just like blow another team out. They're destined to play one possession games. But I mean, you have to like what you saw out of Murray. There's still the questions about, I think the big question now is like whether he can complete passes over the middle in the intermediate part of the field consistently. And we kind of saw him miss a few of those throws, but
right.
Everything else, he looks to be coming along nicely.
I thought Vance Joseph was great. I mean, I thought the Cardinals' defensive game plan, as the game went on, got better and better, and Schottenheimer just had nothing. I mean, the by overtime, it just looked like, I'm not even sure that the Seahawks had any sort of plan. It looked like Russell Wilson was just dropping back and had no clue what he was looking at, which I am not about to put on Russell Wilson, because he's so good. And you know, if he has any sort of semblance of a plan, he generally finds a way to improvise his way into making it work. And they just had nothing. So we're going to dig in on that game a little bit more. It was actually a pretty fun weekend of NFL football. We're going to talk Titans Steelers, great game between two undefeated teams that turned out to be really fun. We're going to take a look at the Tampa Bay Bucks, who won big again today. 49ers crushed the Patriots, and things do not look healthy in New England. It's just a totally unusual feeling to see a Bill Belichick team this outclassed. I think that was the worst loss of his career by points since he became the coach of the Patriots, which is a long, long time. Also, we're going to look at Mike McCarthy struggling in Dallas, a couple other stories going on that we'll dig into, and get into a couple other games. But I wanted to start the show by just acknowledging a story that sort of got swept away in the games today. And that is that a Jacksonville Jaguars running back that probably most people don't even know much about, Rockwell Armstead. He played at Temple. He was a fifth or sixth round pick last year. Played a little bit last season, but he has had, he was diagnosed with COVID-19 in August, I believe. And he is now going to miss the entire season because he is continued to have respiratory issues. And I mean, this is the reason that you and I have been sort of so concerned as we trace everything going on with coronavirus in the NFL and how flippant at times the response has been, and the system that has been set up that does not really protect these players that well. You know, Armstead is one person, but you know, this the way this thing spreads and is spreading around the country, there's a lot of I think there's still a lot of concern about how this season is going to go moving forward and whether or not it's going to finish up.
Yeah, and the NFL has kind of bailed out just by this week being so good, like in terms of games, that this wasn't more of a discussion. But I mean, it's kind of hard to watch these games and not feel gross knowing that, like, if even if it affects one person's life, one player's life, it just feels like the season should not have happened in hindsight.
Yeah.
And it seems to be affecting this person's life a lot.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I just, and he's 23. He turns 24 later this week, Rockwell Armstead. So, you know, you think just about all the other people surrounding a football team who are not 24, who are older and have other situations going on. You know, luckily so far, it's been a handful of people, but there's no way to really control this. I mean, it's the bubble system worked, but the NFL obviously cannot pull something like that off at this juncture. So we'll just, I guess, continue to hope that this doesn't spread out of control and that more people who do get it, because, you know, Cam Newton had it, and Cam Newton does not look very good as a football player at this point. So we'll just hope that it doesn't spread. You know, it's a tight line to walk right now, because it's, like you said, it's hard to watch this. It's hard to sort of revel in the games as good as they are, knowing everything that's going on. But that's where we are, 2020. Okay, let's dig in on Titans Steelers, Steven. I know, you know, we kind of went into this game, two undefeated teams. I think we both thought Pittsburgh was like a slightly better team, and it turned out that way. Pittsburgh wins 27-24. But by far the most fascinating thing coming out of this game is, and we, I feel like we have discussed the Ben Roethlisberger pass chart every week, and most weeks we've been like, wow, Ben Roethlisberger is just like, I think I called him, you know, your like slightly drunk uncle on Thanksgiving, who's just sort of like popping his like 5 to 7 yard passes. And that was what Ben Roethlisberger did again today. He, if you look at his passing chart on Next Gen Stats or the passing zone graph, he literally threw 15, he completed 15 of 17 passes to the left, far left quadrant of 0 to 10 yards. And then behind the line of scrimmage on the left side, he completed 3 of 4. So he only threw 49 passes, and 21 of them were in that zone right there. He only completed 3 passes total over 10 yards in the air. So this is still that limited Ben Roethlisberger we've been seeing, but it was enough. It got the job done. What did you make in this game? Were you impressed with either team as far as them trying to climb up a rung in the AFC pecking order?
No, I think both teams showed why we've been a little bit skeptical of each. For the Steelers, like you said, it's been Ben Roethlisberger and the discussion of what's this offense's ceiling. And watching the game, it shows you like how small the margin of error for this offense is, just because they have to string together these long drives to score. Cause there are no like big chunk plays really, unless they're schemed up. Like they're not coming within the structure of a typical passing play. And like the first drive, I think they went 6 for 6, or it was something like 6 for 6 on the first drive, or maybe it was the first two drives when they strung together these two long drives. I think one drive was 15 plays. The next one was over 12 also. And I just don't think you can beat the best offenses in the league playing like that. Like you can't have that small of a margin for error against a team like the Chiefs, which has such a big margin for error with their offense because it takes them like a play or two to score. And that's why the Steelers are the best team in the NFL by record and probably in the AFC just based on point differential right now. But I would put them a tier below the Chiefs and maybe even the Ravens.
Yeah, we'll find out next week because they play the Ravens then.
And speaking of Roethlisberger, he was the fourth worst quarterback by CPOE this week. According to Next Gen Stats. So he, like, we just talked about how bad Cam Newton looked. He was worse than Cam Newton. Cam Newton had minus 1.3 CPOE, and Ben Roethlisberger had a minus 5.2. His expected completion percentage was 70.5, and he ended up with a completion percentage of 65.3. And I thought that the last interception kind of summed up where he is as a quarterback right now. Like, he tried to throw a pass that I think he usually completes. It wasn't a bad decision at all. It was a Tampa 2 coverage, and he had, I think it was Deontay Johnson matched up with the linebacker, and Ben just put a little bit too much air under the ball. He couldn't, like, just drive it in there like he used to be able to do, and it hung up in the air, and the Titans got a pick, and that almost gave him a chance to tie the game, if not for the Gostkowski miss. Another hit to Gostkowski's Hall of Fame resume, by the way.
Was that the one in the end zone there?
Yes.
And I think that was actually Juju, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, who actually was
okay, you're right, it was.
Who was okay again today. 9 catches for 85 yards. So there's that. But Chase Claypool did absolutely nothing.
Roethlisberger stat. His average completion today traveled 3.1 yards on average. I think that was, let me make sure.
That's amazing.
That was the lowest in the league. The only one that was close was Drew Lock. Drew Lock went 3.6, Andy Dalton 4.2.
I just want to go back and find I remember when Purdue started running like the spread offense and throwing the ball short and how up in arms people were, you know, it's not real quarterback play. And now this big, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, who you would think of as one of the bigger arm quarterbacks of the era, is just chucking the ball 3.3 yards and making this offense go. The Steelers were 8 of 13 on third down, which really is what swayed the game. They, you know, they were able to keep drives going. What do you diagnose as far as the Titans? Why are they not able to stop this offense on those critical downs?
Like, from a surface level view, this defense kind of looks a lot like it did last year. Mm-hmm. But not having Dean Pease involved in the game planning, I think, is taking its toll, and we're seeing it on third down because that's where Dean Pease really did his best work, I think, from a schematic standpoint. And that hasn't been the case. I think they've been the second worst team on third down all year by EPA. Only the Panthers have been worse. And the Panthers have a Big 12 coach coaching their defense right now. So I think that's one of the big – that's probably the issue. That's what's holding them back from being – I think it's going to hold them back from going on that run that they went on in the playoffs, because a lot of that success – remember, like, Tannehill wasn't great in the playoffs. Henry was, but he's still a running back, and there's only so much a running back can do for his team. Like, their defense was really the star of that show against the Ravens, against the Patriots even, and they don't have that this year. It's not like DMP's ever coached up a great defense statistically within Tennessee, but he had these game plans where he could throw things at quarterbacks on third down and the Titans were able to get off the field, and they don't have that this year. And I don't know if they're ever going to find it, because it's hard to replace a guy like Dean Pease, who has been one of the better defensive coordinators in the league. And he retired this offseason.
Right. Like we mentioned, the Steelers Ravens, that game is next weekend. Any thoughts on that one? What's an early preview?
I really am interested in seeing how Ben handles this. That defense, because they're going to come after him. We know they're going to come after him. And I don't know, under pressure, he just hasn't looked like the same player this year. And the Ravens are going to play a lot of man coverage. They're going to force him to make tight window throws. They're going to force him to throw downfield. And it, like, he's shown nothing this year that suggests he can do that. So I think we're going to learn a lot about the Steelers and their ceiling next week.
Okay. Let's go to the Bucs Raiders game. Buccaneers win this 45-20. Tom Brady looks good. 33 for 45, 639 yards, 4 TDs. I mean, you know, the game itself is not what I want to focus on. You know, I think we are in agreement that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are one of the teams that can win the Super Bowl, is at the top of the NFC at this point, near the top of the NFC. But I want to focus in on the news that came a couple days ago. And that's also what reporters focused in on after the game as they were speaking to Coach Bruce Arians. The Buccaneers surprisingly swooped in and were the team to be willing to sign Antonio Brown, a wide receiver with a checkered past. He's been accused by two women of sexual assault and other aggressive behavior. One led to a suspension that is ending after week 8. Another is headed to civil court. He has had numerous other run-ins. You can find all of them pretty much on For the Win if you Google Antonio Brown. You know, he's a headache, to say the least. And he does not appear to be a player that Tampa Bay needed, or I mean, the fit is just bizarre. Tampa Bay came, you know, the whole offseason, we talked about Tom Brady going to a team with weapons, with real guys that he could throw to. Chris Godwin and Mike Evans in particular. They added Rob Gronkowski. Scotty Miller actually led the team with 6 catches for 109 yards today and a touchdown. There were tons of weapons already. This move, I don't know, man. Arians tried to knock down the idea that Tom Brady made this happen. Brady and Brown obviously played together in New England briefly, and Brady, for whatever reason, has defended Brown time and time again. I mean, he's really been a guy who's wanted this to happen publicly. He's been very open about that he thought Brown was a good fit on the team, and did not seem concerned by the things that cost him that NFL chance. And so Arians is saying that's not the case that happened here, but Arians also earlier said that Brown would not be a good fit on this team, and now is saying, oh, well, why not? It's another weapon, and I believe in second chances. So this just feels, I don't know, man. This feels very, very strange to me. What do you make of this decision? Why is this happening with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
That's a good question. I have no idea. I think it's Tom Brady. Like you said, when we were talking before the podcast, like, Arians said this wasn't a fit. And the only thing that's changed is Tom Brady. I would assume he was asked about it, and he was asked about AB directly, and he apparently vouched for him. Otherwise, I don't think the signing would have happened. And yeah, it's the same discussion we had with the Seahawks on the last podcast. Why is this team this is a luxury pick for them? Why are they making this move? I don't even know if there's enough snaps to go around for AB to even make sense on the roster. Obviously, he's signing for the league minimum, so it's not going to hurt. There's no risk at all. The only risk is to the locker room and, like, what he's going to do in the locker room if he's not getting a lot of snaps. Because who are you taking snaps away from? Because this is a team that has played a lot of 2 tight ends and even 3 tight ends at times. So there haven't been too many 3 receiver sets, and maybe that changes with AB because he is going to be one of the better players on the team now. But I think it changes what the Bucs have been doing offensively, and I don't even think that makes sense at this point. Doing that, they've been on a roll, and now you're going to change how your offense looks, the structure of your offense in week 8. Any way you look at it, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I get Arian saying, like, we believe in second chances, but AB's first chance, I guess, isn't even resolved yet. Like, we don't even know the outcome of this case or what's going to happen. And yeah, Arian says if it turns out like the justice system says that he did this, that he's not going to be with them anymore. Like, why is he on the team right now then?
Right.
If that's a possibility.
Right. If we're just we're waiting for this, which, you know, civil cases take forever. I mean, they and it's technically outside of, you know, it's like sort of it's not really the justice system.
And the Garen saying that Brown deserves a second chance. What if this case is unresolved and you don't know if he's guilty of this? What is he getting the second chance for?
Right. Right. yeah. And that, I mean, you know, we mentioned it. You said it, I think last show you said, like, it's not that he's a cancer in locker rooms. It's that he's a cancer for wherever town he lives. You know, like this, I mean, the accusations from these women are horrific. And if you are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and you are inviting him to your team, then you are, you know, putting people in potential danger in your town. Women, if, you know, because this player, I mean, he's been suspended for it and he's being sued for it. So I, you know, it's just, it just really feels like desperation from Tom Brady. You know, we know that he is a guy who is is incredibly driven, right? Tom Brady is 43 and like doesn't eat most foods and stretches like 3,000 times a day to continue to be the football player that he is. I mean, he really wants to win again. We all know that. And this just feels like he wants to add another weapon and is not really thinking about the broader picture here and the possible repercussions. He's a laser focused guy, and it's, you know, in some ways it's working again, right? The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are really good. They're a really good football team and certainly feels like they're going to be there in the end, pushing to make it to the NFC Championship and possibly the Super Bowl. So he's getting what he wants, but this it's a sort of just a baffling decision from a larger standpoint. This game, I mean, I'm not sure there's a whole lot to say about it other than Nelson Agholor had 5 catches for 107 yards and everyone in Philadelphia is just feels very sad, confused.
We may need to revisit his legacy in Philadelphia and put a little more blame on Carson Wentz. No, I'm just kidding. But
Carson Wentz? Probably the wide receivers coach. I don't even know. Do the Eagles even have one of those?
They have a coach for like every little thing, it seems like. They have a passing game coordinator, run game coordinator. I'm sure they have like, they have like a wide receiver coach who just coaches the deep routes and then another one who just does the shorter routes. But like, I thought the Raiders were a team that could potentially attack this Bucs defense the way you need to attack it. Like, I tweeted this earlier. I've been watching the Bucs defense this past week, and I think you have to attack their base defense. So a team like the Raiders that plays with a fullback so often is set up to do that, but I don't understand why anyone would run on this Bucs defense on early downs. So the Raiders ran 19 times on early downs. They averaged minus 0.31 EPA, and they had a success rate of 16% on those early down runs.
Jeez.
But the early down pass, they averaged 0.15 EPA. I mean, that's not great, but it's still a lot better than minus 0.31. And then they had a success rate of 60, which is actually very good. And I think this is just – I think the Raiders aren't like a great team, I don't think. And – the blitz was definitely getting to Derek Carr. Like, there were times where he looked legit scared out there with Devin White coming after him, which, I mean, I don't blame him. Devin White is a scary guy.
Yeah.
But I feel like against a better coach team that has a similar setup, like, say, the Rams or the 49ers even, I think that's a team that's going to give this defense a lot of problems. And I think that if this 49ers defense can get a little bit more healthier – although a lot of their dudes, especially on the defensive line, are out for the year, so maybe that's not possible. I think that's a team that could actually give the Bucs some problems if they make the playoffs.
Interesting. Yeah, let's jump to the 49ers. They won 33-6 against the Patriots. You know, it was never really a game. I can't stress enough how awful the Patriots looked. But the 49ers, this is a couple weeks in a row now where they put together – strong defensive performances. And this week, at least Jimmy Garoppolo did what was put in front of him. You know, I mean, we know Kyle Shanahan is an absolute genius and gives Garoppolo throws that he can make. Jimmy G still had two interceptions that were not so great, but this team, like you said, I mean, it's, we thought that the Bosa injury would doom it. And now the secondary is playing at an entirely different level with Jason Verrett back, which you wrote about last week and took a deeper look at. And that continued this week. I want to talk more about the Patriots because I just think it is such an interesting, weird situation to see this team struggling. And first of all, you've watched Cam Newton a lot. You know, you sort of grew up watching him and broken down a lot of film. You did deep dives on over the last couple of years when people said, well, he's these injuries are going to get to him, the shoulder injury, the foot injury. So I feel like you've watched a ton of tape and you were so excited about what the possibility of him pairing with Josh McDaniels and playing in a Bill Belichick team and what that was going to look like. There were flashes of it early on and there was an adjustment period, which everyone knew there would be, right? It's two systems melding, a guy in a system melding after years, with different parts. So that's natural that it was going to take a while. And then Cam Newton went out with COVID, has come back. And I think to you, this is as bad as he's ever played, right? This is like the worst quarterbacking you've ever seen out of Cam Newton.
Completion percentage was, I think it was 61.3, which was one of the lowest of the week. So it's not even like he had open throws to make. It's just a high degree of difficulty, and he's just not a quarterback right now that's able to play like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's confounding to see. I mean, it's sad, I think. I think that you just... a guy who was underappreciated for so long, who was really doing thing and playing quarterback at a very high level and never got the credit for it for a variety of reasons. Dating all the way back to when he was in college and stole a laptop and had to go through the JUCO system and then play at Auburn, and has just always had questions about him. And I mean, he brings this up himself. He talks about it all the time that he's judged at a different standard. And I think that you were, people like you who've watched him and wanted him to be more appreciated thought this was his chance. And now it's falling apart for a variety of reasons. Is there a fix for what's going on in New England? I mean, can Bill Belichick pull this or turn this thing around?
Yeah, I'm not going to count them out just because right. Bill Belichick is still there. And like, there's a chance that maybe like Cam Newton is hurt right now and his hand will get better eventually and he'll start throwing the ball better. And Josh McDaniels will eventually fix the offense. But I mean, the ceiling is definitely lower than we thought even coming out of that Seahawks game or even like the Chiefs game. And I don't see any way this team is playing on Championship Sunday, which had been a thing that they had like done every year until last year. I think we're at the same spot with them. Like, they'll be lucky enough to play a wild card game and win a wild card game at this point. And I know everyone's going to compare Cam to Brady last year and they're going to say, oh, Brady was carrying this offense. It wasn't his fault. Like, people saying he was washed were wrong, but coming into this game, Cam Newton had better advanced metrics than Brady did last year across the board. So I don't even think you can make that claim. Like, this offense is worse than it was a year ago, personnel wise. And I don't think Cam Newton's poor performance over the last two or three games that he's played, like, excuses what Tom Brady did. Like, explains everything about Tom Brady's bad stat line last year. I think it's clear that this supporting cast has been bad, but I don't think Tom Brady was like elevating it last year. I think he was just not hurting it at all because they were still like a bad team offensively.
Yeah. it's we've learned that lesson the hard way too many times to not count out the Patriots. But the 49ers, despite the big win today, are actually last in the NFC West, which is the NFC West easily the best division in football? Am I overthinking that? I guess the AFC North would be the competition there.
Maybe the NFC East. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I think it is. Maybe it is by far. And I think that was like the case going into the season, and it's like lived up to the hype, which is kind of surprising.
Right. So let's talk a little bit more about the Seattle game, because we didn't dig in. We sort of reveled about how great it was, but like we said, 37-34 in overtime, and Russell Wilson was, I mean, he had some wow throws. The fourth down touchdown pass to Lockett in the very, very, very back millimeter of the end zone was just astounding. He had a long pass to Lockett, you know, the signature Russ Wilson lofted ball that just lands exactly where it needs to. But then he had a couple interceptions that were dicey, and including one to your good pal Isaiah Simmons, who was that his fifth snap of the game?
It was his fifth snap game. So it turns out we figured out how to use Isaiah Simmons, and that's to simply have him drop back right where the quarterback is throwing, and he doesn't even have to move.
Isaiah Simmons, the eighth pick in the draft, who has really played sparingly for Arizona, even though Arizona tends to rotate some guys in on defense, and I think traded for an outside linebacker this week, if I remember correctly. So Simmons is finding his way, but I don't know what happened on that interception that set up the Zane Gonzalez missed a field goal early in overtime, and then got redemption after Isaiah Simmons' interception. But it looked like a busted play. It looked like Wilson was throwing to a different spot than where his receivers were going. I'm not really sure what happened, but Simmons was there and he snagged it. Kudos to him. What did you make of Russell Wilson's performance? Is he the MVP right now?
After that game, I would have to say no.
Wow. Knocked him down. I think Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. I thought Aaron Rodgers' game last week didn't look as bad as Wilson's game this week. Like, I don't think Rodgers actively lost the Packers the game. I thought the offensive line was far worse than Rodgers was. And even the sacks I would put on Russell Wilson, like, if there's a criticism of him besides his pocket presence being a little iffy at times, he's never been a quarterback that seems to get protections and knows how to fix protections before the snap. Like, he's been fooled by blitzes. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is what happened on those last two sacks. I would have to watch all 22 to like really confirm it. But like when there are that many pass rushers on the defensive line, I'm not going to put it on the offensive line. Like, someone has to sort out the protection. And I don't think Wilson did a good job of doing that. So I would even put those sacks on him. And then the interceptions were obviously bad. The one to Simmons was, even if the receiver ran the wrong route, I think it was a bad pass and he threw it right to Simmons anyway. So this was a game that, like, you have to say that he actively lost the Seahawks, even though he was brilliant at times. Like, those four or five plays really made the difference. And really, DK Metcalf saved him from that pick six, which might have, like, the game may have never even gone to overtime if he didn't hustle and chase down Buda Baker.
Yeah. You guys, I mean, if there's some way that you didn't see that play, we have a post about it for the win. The dots are, I mean, the play itself is amazing to watch. DK Metcalf is really moving, but to see it in dot form is just, it's art. What did you think about Kyler Murray? Much was made last week of Murray. I think he completed like 34% of his passes. He was much better today. And, you know, I'm checking it out now, but I think by every stat and every measurement, he was a really, you know, had a really strong game. He had a CPOE of 8, you know, so he was putting the ball where he needed to put it. Just seemed to really take a step forward today, as did the rest of the offense.
Yeah, I'm encouraged by what I've seen from Murray the last couple of weeks. Even I know he wasn't great in the Cowboys game, but just him hitting on deep plays, that's something I thought this offense lacked, even going back to last year. And it made more sense last year because they didn't have Hopkins. They didn't have anyone that was like Hopkins. And it's good to see that Kliff is taking a player like Hopkins and getting the most out of him. There's a Next Gen Stats tweet about how they're using Hopkins. And apparently he's like seeing a lot fewer press coverages, and he's getting, I think he has a higher completion or expected completion rate. So whatever Kliff's doing, he's doing a better job than Bill O'Brien did at getting Hopkins the ball. And that's a really good sign for Kliff going forward. Right. What hasn't been a great sign for Kliff is his game management, which was awful again tonight. Like the end of the game, the field goal situation, that was just a horrible game management. And that's been a problem for Kliff going back to last year. He's been better than he was last year, but that's just because the bar was so low after I thought he was one of the worst coaches in terms of game management last year.
Right.
And it's something he really needs to work on. And this goes back to Texas Tech. Like, he wasn't a great game manager at Texas Tech either.
Yeah. Yeah. Andy Reid was a bad game manager too. Probably.
Yeah. So, is,
but
yeah. So like, that stuff doesn't matter. When you have a great quarterback, like that stuff just goes away. So if Kyler turns into Patrick Mahomes, it won't be.
That seems unlikely, but here's the thing is that, he did have Kliff had Patrick Mahomes and they weren't good. So, you know, like in
that's
college,
that's a very good point.
Is Tyler Lockett the most underrated NFL player of the last 5 years? I feel like nobody talks about him. I mean,
I feel like he's actually underrated. Like, there's like no one is underrated now. Like, people were talking last week how Levante David was so underrated, even though he's like makes the Pro Bowl every year and stuff. I don't even know if that's true. He may have never made the Pro Bowl, but I mean, I feel like
the Pro Bowl isn't a thing anymore, right? Didn't they get rid of it? I don't know.
I don't think it's not going to be a thing this year, but
okay.
Yeah, like Levante David is not underrated. Everyone knows he's good. But Tyler Lockett is like amazing. Like,
right.
Russ, like even that throw, the fourth down throw when he lobbed it up in the back end zone, that was an extremely difficult catch to make because it wasn't just that he had to keep his feet in bounds. Like the angle of the throw, he kind of had to adjust to it and come back towards the ball while going back, ranging back in the end zone and getting his feet down. He had that first catch on the first drive where he was diving and caught it with one hand. He's just an amazing receiver. And he's so fast. Like, you wouldn't expect him to be that type of receiver who can catch contested balls, but he does it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he had 15 of Russell Wilson's 33 completions. He had 15 catches for 200 yards. And I think DK Metcalf, obviously, it's hard to tell on TV film, but, you know, I think Metcalf was drawing a lot of coverage and giving Lockett some favorable matchups. But I mean, he's was doing this before Metcalf was in the league. He's just been a really good player. Are the Seahawks, what's your power ranking in the NFC right now? Is it Tampa Bay one and then Seattle, or is Green Bay jumping back in?
Ooh, I think I would put Tampa Bay first right now. I don't think the gap between Tampa Bay and Green Bay is that big, actually. Like, I don't think it's as big as what we saw last week. And Seattle would be below Green Bay for me. I think I would say that Green Bay could probably beat Seattle, but I think Seattle might be able to beat Tampa Bay. I don't know if that makes sense, but I think it really comes down to matchups and who's right. playing who and how the playoffs shake out. And I also think the Rams have a chance at like beating Tampa Bay just based on the things I was saying earlier about how to attack their defense. I think the Rams are a team that could do that. And even like 49ers, I think, have a chance at beating any of these teams. Like, we've seen Kyle Shanahan dominate all of these defensive coaches before in the past.
The Counter.
Yeah. Power of Shanahan, man.
Shanahan, by the way, Shanahan took Belichick to the cleaners. And
that's astounding.
And I think it just goes to show like how flawed this Patriots team is. It's just so slow, and it's hard to win in today's NFL when you're so slow. Like, good coaching can hide some of that stuff, but like, I feel like the biggest loss for the Patriots this year has been Dante Hightower, because Juwan Bentley is awful. Like, he's a very good like run stuffer, but in coverage he just gets exposed. Like, Kyle Shanahan attacked him relentlessly today, which we should have seen coming. Like, this is what he does. He just like attacks bad linebackers, and it was apparent who his target was this week.
You forgot to do the microscope meme. You forgot, man.
Yeah, I haven't been doing it for the last couple of weeks. I should have done it this week. That was an easy pick. Like, Juwan Bentley, I'm convinced that I'm faster than Juwan Bentley, and I'm very slow.
Uh-oh. I see an off-season race coming. Let's dive into the muck here of the NFC East. Not necessarily to talk too much about the football game featuring the football team today. The football team victorious 25-3 over the Dallas Cowboys. But I think the bigger story here is just the implosion of the Cowboys, which, you know, obviously you lose your star quarterback, and that's bad, and you expect things to not be as good. But this game, you know, they did spend $7 million to sign Andy Dalton and have that back up in place, and it was not working. Dalton, as you probably saw, was knocked out of the game with a just horrifically vicious, awful, terrible hit that should lead to a long suspension. I think it was in the third. It was toward the latter part of the third that he was sliding, and John Bostic of the Washington football team just absolutely leveled him. Dalton left with a presumed concussion. But it was already 22-3 at that point for the football team. And so things were going poorly for Dallas. And I think it's fair to wonder at this point, is Mike McCarthy going to get a second year as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys? You know, they just have not, this team is 2-5. And, you know, even with Dak Prescott, was not exactly lighting anything on fire. And the defense is absolutely horrific. So what's your take? I mean, is this, do you see Jerry Jones showing any patience with this process right now?
No, I don't. I know like people will point to Jason Garrett and like how much time he got, but there was like a loyalty factor there. Like, Jason Garrett was a lifetime Cowboy. He had been in Dallas for ages, and he had been groomed for the head coaching job. So it makes sense that Jerry wanted to give him every chance he could get. He doesn't have that with Mike McCarthy. And I think there's a sense of urgency with Jerry Jones right now with his team. He wants to win a Super Bowl. And it's very apparent that this coaching staff, as it's currently constructed, is not good enough to win a Super Bowl. And I don't know how they justify not paying Dak Prescott this offseason. Like, they have to give him anything he wants. Because Andy Dalton is not, he's been terrible the last 2 weeks, and he was last in CPOE this week, minus 13.5%. But I mean, if you were putting together a ranking of NFL backups before the season, he would have been number one. And it's looked this bad with him at under center. And then Ben DiNucci comes in. That's a made up name. Like, I'm not even going to insult Drew Lock and call him a Drew Lock. He's like a Kyle Allen.
Ben DiNucci, James Madison legend. How could you, man? How could you? Who are the Cowboys? I mean, I guess they'll probably just try to trot Andy Dalton back out there as soon as he's ready, which just seems crazy. He should take at least a few weeks off to let his brain heal. But I mean, the Cowboys have to sign somebody, right? Are they going to roll with DiNucci?
I mean, I think
he was a seventh round pick, so.
I think you have to, because I know people like the Cowboys tanking for a quarterback thing is gaining steam, but I really think it would be a mistake to let Dak Prescott walk. Yeah, and I think Jerry right now is probably seeing this offense and what it's doing and realizing, like, okay, my quarterback is very good.
Right.
And we should keep him because it's a sure thing. We know he's going to be very good. Where we don't know if Trevor, like, I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be very good. I think Justin Fields is going to be very good, but we don't know. You can never know with these things. So I don't even think it's like in their best interest to really tank. Like, if any of these teams should be going for the division and trying to win, it's probably the Cowboys just because.
Right.
So they're one of the teams that I would say should be in the market for a quarterback. Like, even if Andy Dalton was healthy, I think they should be doing everything they can do to upgrade that position, whether it's trading for someone like, say, maybe Jameis Winston's available, or I don't even know another quarterback, another backup quarterback that you would want to pursue. But I think they should be looking for someone to upgrade that position because they could definitely win the division still.
Yeah, about that division, the Philadelphia Eagles hold a commanding lead with a 2-4-1 record. The Washington football team and Dallas Cowboys are 2-5, and the New York Giants are 1-6. All three teams have negative point differentials. Negative 33 for the Eagles, negative 32 for the football team. Maybe the football team is going to win this division. Negative 67 for the Cowboys and negative 52 for the Giants. There's only four other teams in the NFC that have negative point differentials, and Detroit and Carolina both are in single digits. This division is just horrible. I mean, how does this happen? The confluence of such bad teams together in the same division, which was once considered one of the better divisions.
I have no explanation for it. It's it's the football gods punishing the networks for putting them on prime time so much. It's the only explanation.
Who, if Mike McCarthy gets the heave ho, and you are advising Jerry Jones, who is the coach that you want to take over that Dak Prescott loaded offense?
Is this like free reign? Like, I can pluck any coach from any other team, or like
you can't like steal another team's head coach. I mean, I don't know. You'd have to trade, right?
I don't know. I would offer like $30 million to Kyle Shanahan.
Man, I'm never gonna let you be a rich guy again. You're just throwing money around now that I made you rich. What about a more realistic candidate? But what about one that doesn't currently have an NFL head coaching job?
I think Joe Brady's the one that makes the most sense with Dak's skill set.
Yeah, interesting.
Like, Eric Bieniemy is obviously another choice, but I think I'd rather see him with Deshaun Watson.
Mm.
I think that would be a pretty good matchup, just how the Chiefs run their offense and how Deshaun Watson plays. I think that one makes sense. Like the other names, Brian Daboll is obviously going to be a head coaching candidate. I don't know if he makes a lot of sense for Dak, but I think Dak's going to be good no matter what offense you put him in. That Joe Brady offense, how he runs his offense, just makes perfect sense for a player like Dak. And like, a lot of people were giving Joe Burrow Dak comparisons before the draft, and I think that's a big reason why.
Interesting. So what about Joe Brady's offense, which correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you were like totally sold that it would be fantastic at the NFL level, or you had some reservations. I mean, we weren't even sure how much of the play calling he was doing at LSU. I mean, he was the passing game coordinator. It became pretty apparent that his fingerprints were all over what they were doing, but I don't think you were like super sold, but now it appears that what you're seeing with in Carolina has you excited about it. Why would it be a good fit with Dak in your mind?
Oh no, I was high on Joe Brady when they hired him. I thought that was a good hire. And one of the reasons is he seems to understand what his players do best and how to utilize those players. Like, Robbie Anderson's being used perfectly. DJ Moore's being used perfectly. I would argue that he's not getting the most out of Curtis Samuels, but it makes sense with the other weapons he has, and that he's, you know, utilizing DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson more because there was more resources
allocated to those guys. They used a first round pick on DJ Moore. They signed Robbie Anderson to a deal this offseason. I really want to see what he does when Christian McCaffrey eventually returns. Mm-hmm. We obviously saw it earlier in the year and it looked good, but I want to see all these weapons together. And I just think he would be the one that would get the most out of all those weapons in Dallas. And his offense is one that I think puts a lot on the quarterback's plate from a mental standpoint and asks his quarterback to actually play the quarterback position. He's not going to hide a quarterback, which I think is what you want when you have a player like Dak Prescott, who's so good at so many different things and he has really no weaknesses. I think it makes all the sense in the world for an offense like that.
Where do you want Dable to end up? Did you say where you thought he would go? I mean, who are the Jets going to hire? It's probably the biggest one out there, right? Because may end up with Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I actually tweeted earlier today that I wanted Joe Brady to end up with the Jets and end up with Trevor Lawrence.
Mm.
So I think that's the one I want to see. I forget what I said for Dayball. There's an obvious one out there, and I think Justin Fields. Wherever Justin Fields goes, I would really like to see Dayball land with him, because I think he could take advantage of that skill set. We've seen it with Josh Allen. I think Justin Fields is a better player than Josh Allen, but he has that running ability. He's a tough guy. He's a big quarterback that can hang in the pocket and make throws downfield. I think that makes the most sense for a coach like Dayball.
Yeah, interesting. That's a good transition to the Bills-Jets game. Let's just do some quick hitters on. Let's do some Ben Roethlisberger passes on the rest of the games today. Just little quick darts. And Bills beat the Jets 18-10. It appears to me that the Bills only kicked field goals. Am I seeing this right? I'm now looking at the box score and I'm just seeing 6-6-6. It is zero in the first quarter and then 6-6-6. So Josh Allen, was he good? Was he okay? He's had a rough span the last few weeks. Where was he today?
That 666 signifies the deal with the devil Josh Allen apparently made to avoid interceptions, because the Jets dropped two interceptions in the first quarter. It could have very easily have been a three turnover quarter for Josh Allen. He was not good. He had some inaccurate throws. Mm. He took some bad sacks. He threw into coverage a couple times. Like, when it comes to playing the quarterback position, he wasn't very good. But this is the reason why in the offseason when I wrote about Sam Darnold, I kind of threw in a line about Josh Allen and which quarterback I'd rather have. Sam Darnold, I think when it comes to just playing the quarterback position and throwing the ball, I think he's a better player than Josh Allen. But when you add in everything else that a quarterback can do, like with Josh Allen, who can run, you can involve him in the run game, I think that's what makes him a better football player. We saw that today. He wasn't good as a quarterback, but his contribution in the run game and as a scrambler allowed the Bills to move the ball. They didn't score a touchdown, but they were obviously moving the ball. They had 8 field goal attempts.
Wow.
So it was really just them stalling when they got into scoring position. And I think Josh Allen's work as a runner is the reason why.
Yeah. I mean, he ran 11 times for 61 yards, which was most on the team. I think what other games we haven't covered yet.
What you want to talk about? Lions? The Lions, to start getting some playoff love, by the way. I'm just throwing that out there. They have some winnable games coming up. They have a pretty easy schedule. Lions? Yes. I'm telling you right now, in 3 weeks, we're going to be talking about the Lions as a potential playoff
team. They play in the same division as the mighty Chicago Bears, right? 5-1.
A team they should have beat if DeAndre Swift could catch. Probably DeAndre Swift can't catch, so I shouldn't slander him like that.
But so this team that you're touting right now, they won the football game today because Todd Gurley forgot not to score, right? Is that
the team true. You're
talking about? That is, yeah. But that play is on for the win, too.
But they won. The reason why that I'm coming away from this week kind of intrigued by the Lions, I don't think they're actually going to make the playoffs or win any games in the playoffs. But they won this game with their defense. They didn't need Matt Stafford to go crazy and put up 30 points. The defense actually played okay, at least in situational football, the Falcons did move the ball, but they came up short on some fourth downs and some third downs. And it seemed like whatever Matt Patricia was doing seemed to be bothering Matt Ryan. There were a lot of plays where he was throwing under pressure and throwing very difficult passes. Sometimes the Falcons receivers came down with it. Other times they didn't. But it was an uncomfortable game for Matt Ryan. And that's something we really haven't seen the Lions do to any quarterback in a long time.
So, I mean, are you buying them as a potential playoff team? Are you actually...
Oh, no.
You've fallen for Patricia before. You thought that he was...
Yeah, he's had some good game plans that roped me in, but there's a big difference between being a good defensive coordinator and being a good head coach, and he fails that second part. But no, I don't actually think they're going to make the playoffs. I just think they're going to fool some people into thinking that they have a chance over the next couple of weeks.
Okay, so you're predicting the talk, not the...
I already feel bad for Lions fans buying into the hype.
What about the New Orleans Saints? The Saints got by today. The Panthers 27-24 are now 4-2. Drew Brees looked, from what little I saw this game today, looked okay. I mean, didn't have either of his top receivers. Michael Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders were both out. So found a way. Are you seeing any sort of improvement from the Saints that might make you think they should be back in the conversation?
Yeah. I watched that game and Drew Brees looked like an adequate version of himself. Like if he's this and the defense finally figures it out, which their secondary has been a real issue this year. Uh-huh. And the only reason I'm not more pessimistic about it is there is a lot of talent in it. And we've seen this defense get off to slow starts in the past and then rebound late in the year, especially the last 3 years, that's been the case. And it's usually happened after week two, but with no preseason, maybe that it extends to week six this time around. But yeah, Drew Brees looked good. Like he's throwing the ball downfield, at least downfield for him. It wasn't like a Ben Roethlisberger performance. He was actually, throwing over 10 yards. And he was accurate, and he was getting through his progressions in a timely manner, like we've seen out of Drew Brees for his whole career. It looked like 2018 Drew Brees to me.
So you feel like that's a good step. They could be there.
Yeah, I think they're still like very obviously like a tier below the top tier of the NFC, but there's a chance that they close that gap and join teams like the Bucks and Seahawks and Packers in maybe a month's time.
Are the Panthers finally tanking to your liking, or they've blown that, haven't they?
Yeah, they're way past that point. I think they're going to be a 6-10 type of team, 7-9, and probably be drafting like in the 10-12 range. So no quarterback this year, unfortunately.
Sorry, man. What about Green Bay? We touched on what's going on a little bit there, but they beat Houston 35-20. A bounce back game after losing big last week. You mentioned that you didn't think last week the Bucs game was on Aaron Rodgers. Threw 4 TDs today. Looked pretty good. Devontae Adams had almost 200 yards receiving. Texans are what the Texans are, but Green Bay went out and got it done. Did you take anything away from this game for Green Bay?
No, I haven't even watched it yet, but I don't think any game against a poorly coached Texans team should count. Like, I'm not learning anything from that game. Like, what does it tell us that Aaron Rodgers is playing well? We knew that Devontae Adams is very good against a bad secondary. We knew that also. Yeah, I don't think this should change anybody's perception about what the Packers are going to be going forward.
Deshaun Watson was once again totally brilliant. He's just so good. What little I saw, he's just carry. Even though the Texans are not good, Watson has to carry them. The Cowboys being so bad without Dak got me thinking about what the Texans would be without Watson. AJ McCarron is their backup, I think. I mean, that team would not win a football game, right? I mean, this team with Watson might not win another game this season, but I mean, the drop off would just be astounding. I mean,
they're
doing so much work.
They'd be the Jets without Deshaun Watson. And like, I think that's the most damning thing about Sam Darnold is like, if you're a good quarterback, and there's still people that think he's a good quarterback, it would not look this bad. And that was the craziest stat of the day, was that the fact that the Jets only had 4 yards of total offense in the second half. And it gets weirder. Like, their first play of the second half, they gained 13 yards. So they were -9 after that first play.
Couple of youngish QBs. I don't know. Baker Mayfield's not really young anymore. But the Cleveland Browns.
Also, Joe Burrow's like 37.
All right. Cleveland Browns beat the Cincinnati Bengals 37-34. I think you tweeted that Baker Mayfield always looks good against Cincinnati. And why is that? And I mean, it's probably just that Cincinnati's not very good, but and has not been good. But he did throw 5 TDs. I feel like the last one, the one that everyone was like, whoa, what a gutsy throw, was like just, I'm still not sure how it was physically possible that the defensive back didn't touch the ball. It seemed like he had a better chance to touch it than not touch it. And the ball just sank in there.
Yeah.
But the Browns are now 5-2. So there's, you know, they play in the NFC North with the clearly legit Steelers and the Ravens. You know, as you diagnosed last week, they're the problems with the offense, and I think you have a pretty strong feeling that they will figure that out. And even if they don't, they have Lamar Jackson who fixes a lot of problems. So anything make you think the Browns took a step toward those two teams?
No, not at all. Not until Baker Mayfield can prove that he can win when a defense forces him to come off his first read, which the Bengals maybe did like twice. I was trying to keep count, and I maybe counted like 2 or 3 times when it happened. And one of them was, I think it might have been his first touchdown pass when he fired it in low to a tight end. And even that throw was like, he put everything in it just to fire it into a tight window from 5 yards out. Like, I'm not coming away from that game any more optimistic about Baker Mayfield. Like, we know he can play when he can throw to his first read. The question is, what happens when he plays a good defense, which is going to force him to go beyond that first read? And we've seen against the Ravens and Steelers that he just hasn't been able to do it. And yes, the Browns are 5-2, but they also have a -21 point differential, which is the same as the Falcons.
Not great. Mayfield, I mean, both these quarterbacks by CPOE, Mayfield had the best of the weekend at 16.6, and Burrow was not far behind at 12.1. Burrow, I think he hit 400 yards passing. He was sacked 4 times. He continues to sort of wander his way into sacks, and threw 1 interception, 3 touchdowns. The debate about Burrow versus Justin Herbert is a natural one, and it's going to keep intensifying, I think. But we have a couple weeks. I don't want to steal too much of your thunder from. I know this is one of your takes for the Monday take dump, but Justin Herbert threw for 347 yards as the Chargers beat the Jags 39-29. Early returns. What's your gut feeling on which one of these quarterbacks will have the better career?
So I think that's a different question. There's which one will have a better career. I think if you simulated their careers like 1,000 times, probably like 650 times, Burrow has a better career.
Yeah, interesting.
But I feel like the ceiling with Herbert is so much higher, and more of those simulations end with him being a top tier quarterback than they do with Burrow being a top tier quarterback. Like, I think Burrow has a much higher floor, and I think at the very least he's going to be a competent starting quarterback. like I feel like his ceiling is like Alex Smith-ish.
Right.
Whereas Herbert has a wider range of outcomes, but his high-end outcome is much higher than Burrow's just because of the talent he has physically, as a not only just with his arm strength, but as a runner. And I think he's just a better thrower of the football in general. It's not like he just has a strong arm like Josh Allen and can't harness it. Like, we've seen him make just amazing throws this year already. And his, I think it was his first touchdown of the game, was a ball at the seam. That's a throw that that Joe Burrow cannot make. He just can't drive it down the seam like that. He puts so much air under it. And Burrow was really good today, but there were a handful of plays where you could see his arm strength was a real issue and preventing him from making certain throws. And really, he threw the one interception, which was tipped, so it was kind of unlucky. But he got away with, I think there was like two other passes that should have been picked, and he fumbled another time, and the Bengals recovered it. So it wasn't really a great game from him. Like, he just kind of got lucky that the Browns DBs can't catch and they can't recover fumbles, apparently. But watching those two games back to back, and that's how I watched them, like the difference in physical talent was apparent. And that's why I personally, even though I think Burrow is probably going to have a better career, I would take a gamble on Herbert and take him because he has a chance of becoming a top 10 guy one day. Whereas with Burrow, I think it's going to be in that 10 to 15 range, and he'll have seasons where he finishes with like a top 10 production just because he's playing with like a great supporting cast. But I think he's going to need that supporting cast around him to really hit his peak.
Yeah. Burrow is, you know, we've talked about his athleticism and how it's not really NFL level, and he's probably still adjusting to figuring out what he can do at this level. He did run six times for 34 yards, but I was pretty impressed with Herbert on the ground. I mean, he was, I think he was like 9 for 66 yards, but it seemed like he was pretty athletic, more athletic than I thought. I thought he'd be sort of more statuesque.
And he can actually outrun NFL pass rushers, whereas Burrow can't. Like, even today, he tried to outrun like Myles Garrett, and it ended exactly how you expect it to end. Myles Garrett is like a superhuman athlete, and Joe Burrow clearly isn't. And I think that's what made people fall in love with Burrow as a prospect, was his ability to create outside of LSU's offense, which was very good. And he had all this talent around him, but he also had those plays where he was like outrunning the pass rush and throwing it downfield and hitting downfield throws. But those plays just aren't coming right now.
Right.
And I don't think I don't think that's like an adjustment thing. I don't think they're ever going to come because he's just not that great of an athlete.
All right. So I think we hit on every game this week. Let's do a power rankings check-in. We're still got Kansas City at the top, I'm guessing. Actually, we didn't talk about that game, did we? I just totally forgot about the Kansas City.
I forgot it happened too. Like, I'm blanking on what team they even played now.
It was Denver. They played in the snow. They won 43-16. It was like momentarily interesting, and then it was not.
No, Drew Lock was bad. Patrick Mahomes was Patrick Mahomes. Like, yeah, the Chiefs are the best team in the league, and it doesn't matter. They could lose to the Raiders again, and I'm not changing my mind. As long as they're in the playoffs, but as long as Mahomes is healthy, they're the best team in the league. And so then, they're definitely number one. Number two is a difficult question to answer. Right now, this is subject to change. I'm going to go with the Buccaneers. And then that next tier is whatever order you want to put them: Ravens, Steelers, Packers. And then I think there's a big gap. And like, the Seahawks and Saints are capable of making the leap into that next tier.
Wow.
But those are the only teams I see, unless the 49ers defense continues to play like this and Kyle Shanahan continues to just coach his ass off. I don't think any other team can really join that tier.
Good possibility, though. I noticed that you did not put the Chicago Bears or Los Angeles Rams into the conversation. They play tomorrow night, Monday Night Football, or tonight, I guess. It is early Monday morning. Brief preview of that game. What's your thought on our little Nick Foles, Mitch Trubisky, Jared Goff action?
Are you predicting? Are you calling your shot that we're going to see Mitch?
I don't know, man. You told me he would come back someday. That he would.
Yeah, I don't know what to expect because Jared Goff against this Bears defense has not been a pretty sight in the last couple of years. So it could be an awful showing for Goff, and that's the one reason why I didn't mention the Rams in those two tiers. If the Rams beat the Bears comfortably tomorrow, I'm willing to reassess that, and I'm willing to change my take and put the Rams in that second tier that's capable of jumping up to the first tier. But I just don't think it's going to happen. I just don't think Jared Goff is at that point yet as a quarterback. He's still a guy that needs help from his coaching staff. And if he doesn't get it, and if he's not playing on schedule, and if he's playing behind the chains, I think we still see a very flawed quarterback. And I think the Bears are going to force them to play behind the chains tomorrow night or tonight.
Later tonight. Also later today, I took some of your steam away from the take dump with the Burrow Herbert comparison. But you also are going to do a coach draft. You're going to name if you had to draft a coach to start a franchise with, who you would pick. I think that's going to be exciting. And then you're also going to explain why the New York Jets situation is not nearly as dire as people are making it out to seem. And there will also be some other takes that you're still formulating that should drop, I don't know, midday today, whenever we get it all done and edited and put together. And then we will obviously continue covering the league as we go. So stick with us for the win, ftw.usatoday.com. He's at the Steven Ruiz on Twitter. I'm at Chris Corman. Closing thoughts, Steven. How do you want to shut it down tonight?
Shout out to Isaiah Simmons for making me look like a moron tonight, even though
he did it.
And he did it in five snaps. Amazing efficiency from the rookie.
Oh, man. All right. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you next time on The Counter. Take care.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports, featuring For the Win, Steven Ruiz and Chris Corman.